And I'd like to start this morning by reading with you the two texts, the first two passages there. First, from 1 Peter 2:9, "But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light." And second, Romans 12:1-2. "Therefore I urge you, brothers, in the view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good and perfect and pleasing will." Today we're right in the middle of the holiday season, of course. And as I was preparing my remarks today, I thought I would look up and see what modern dictionaries say about the meaning of the word holiday, because I suspected it had been changing. And first I found that the phrase, "the holidays," is coming to be defined by most contemporary dictionaries without necessary reference to religion at all. Here is a fairly typical one that I found. "The time at the end of December and the beginning of January each year that includes solstice observances, Hanukkah, Christmas, and Kwanzaa." And the word holiday itself, all by itself, I found that although it used to and originally meant special religious days, in fact, it always meant special religious days originally, now means, and I quote from one of them, "any special day off work for rest or relaxation." Indeed, in Western nations in general, there has been a general cleansing of this particular period of its relationship to Christianity, and especially to Christmas. We find that policies and sometimes laws prohibit governments, schools, and even businesses from activities that might pressure people who are not Christians into participating in Christian observances. Thus, we find that Santa, gift-giving, and snowmen, all that sort of thing is just fine, but talking about the Nativity, talking about the birth of Jesus often isn't. This is all pretty regional. I think around Hayes it's okay to do this, but the more urban the area you go to, the more what I'm describing is true. It's also okay to have a lot of the old pre-Christian relics that we take up into our celebrations. For example, when Christianity came into European countries, they already had religions. In England, they had the Druids. And the most of Northern Europe, they had Germanic religions that had fertility things. And that's where we get things like holly and mistletoe and the trees and the Yule logs. Yes, that's where they began. And they were simply taken up into Christian observances later on. And those are okay, too. We find that in urban areas, though not here locally, greeters are now being routinely taught to say happy holidays or season's greetings, but not Merry Christmas. Well, this is an especially dramatic example of a fact that we all know. Language changes, it evolves, doesn't it? And we can't complain about that. That's just the nature of language. In my own now getting to be pretty long life, I've seen a lot of words change their meanings pretty dramatically. When I was a little boy, the word gay meant cheerful and lighthearted. Okay? Of course, that isn't what it means right now. I find that words that we even used in one of our songs a bit earlier, like awesome, that's starting to lose its meaning. We're in the middle of watching that one change to meaning something like okay. You know, I go to a restaurant, I order two eggs over easy, and the wait person says awesome, you know. So, and I imagine you've heard it used the same way. Well, what's so striking about the word holiday, however, is not just that the meaning is changing on the term holiday, but it wasn't that it used to mean holy day. It was a way of spelling holy day. You can see it in the spelling of it. Holiday is just the way we spell the Old English word heiligdag. And heilig in the Old English meant holy, and dag was the word for day. And so it's even a spelling of holy day, as you could see very plainly. Now today what I want to talk about is how we Christians, at least, in our own observances of especially Christian holidays, can retain a sense of their holiness, okay, in spite of the fact that the culture is really going the other way. You know, I'm not recommending that we try to do battle with the culture. Let the culture go its own way. You know, we're not out there trying to get them to change what they do. I also heartily agree that we should not pressure people who aren't Christians into observing Christian days. I think that's all wrong. Christianity, the whole spirit of it, respects free will of individuals to make their own choices. And so, no, we don't want to do that. What I'm really concerned about is mostly our children. Okay? Because I think if we let the culture, rather than our own intentional way of celebrating these days, raise our children, that little by little, generation by generation, their thoughts will become the culture's thoughts and not Christian thoughts as they take part in these celebrations. And so we'll start to see children who, in a few generations, if you ask them what Christmas is all about, well, a little nostalgia for white Christmases, you know, if you can have one of those. Maybe feeling not quite loved enough if they don't get diamonds or a Lexus, looking at the ads on TV, and so forth. So what I want to do today is to talk to you a little bit about the idea of holiness, the idea of a holy day, and about what we Christians can do to make these days special, and especially what we Christians can do in raising our young in order that they might grow up to have a sense for why these days are observed by us with all of this meaningfulness. Well, let's start with the word holy. I looked up the word holy in related terms in the Bible. I looked up the King James Version, where most concordances are keyed, and I found it occurs 650 times. That's a lot. And I found that 34% of those were in the New Testament. And the word holy, if you look into bigger dictionaries, not necessarily the one that's at the end of the concordances, you'll find have two parts to their meaning. The first, and the more literal core meaning of it, is different, separate, not usual, ordinary, or common. I'm quoting from most of them there. If you have a holy bowl, a utensil like they had in Old Testament days, you wouldn't dream of using it for ordinary purposes like eating Cheerios in the morning. If you had holy clothing, holy garments like they had in the Old Testament, you wouldn't dream of wearing them when you mowed the lawn or when you were cleaning house. And if you had a holy day, you wouldn't dream about going about your ordinary job. You would take the day off from work. It's all seamlessly fit with that idea of removed from the ordinary. Our culture hasn't forgotten that part, has it? Okay. We do a good job of not going to work and removing things from the ordinary. But that's only half the meaning. Okay. It's what you do instead that's the other half of the meaning, and I'll call that the positive meaning. You remove the thing from the ordinary so that you can instead devote it to the service of God. And if you leave that part out, we haven't done what the word holy means in the Bible. In the Old Testament, a holy bowl, you wouldn't eat Cheerios in it, but you did use it in temple worship. Holy clothing, you wouldn't mow the lawn in the holy clothing, but you would have it be worn by priests as they went about the ceremonies of Old Testament rituals. And likewise, in a holy day, you would not just take off work, you would do things that would help you to focus upon God, on who He is, what He's done for His people, and what He expects of all of us. Well, our present culture, as I said, does a pretty good job of keeping the negative aspect of what holiness is all about. We don't hear much about the positive aspect. And in fact, that might be the difference in the modern definition. Holiday, the modern word, retains just the negative part of holy day, which the Bible is talking about. But what about holy days in the Bible? I'm going to start with the New Testament. Guess how many special holy days are identified in the New Testament? Zero. None. Not a one. Okay. No special holy days. We do find in reading Acts and the epistles that one day was coming to be special, and that was the first day of the week. There's no hint that it started that way, but it became that way, Sunday. Now, some people think Sunday is just the Sabbath. That isn't true. Sabbath was the day before. Sabbath was sundown on Friday to sundown on Saturday. Sunday, the first day of the week, which is special to Christians, is special because it's Resurrection Day, the day that Jesus was raised from the dead. And we find that in the early days of Christianity, it wasn't feasible to get everybody together all the time. And in fact, they didn't have buildings like this where you could do it. It was a hard thing to do. And little by little, they developed the practice of having a larger group of Christians in a place come together once a week. And there is no more fitting day to do that than the first day of the week. So no, it's not the Christian Sabbath. It's the Lord's Day. It's Resurrection Day that we gather on. And if we look in Acts and say, why did they come together on the first day of the week? It identifies four purposes. Teaching. They were there to learn about what God has done and what God wants us to do. Second, prayer. Lots of emphasis on that. Third, fellowship. And fourth, the breaking of the bread, the communion which we just observed together. Now, even though the first day of the week was becoming special for those things, we find that they were actually doing all the same things every day. In fact, they started out doing all the same things every day. They broke the bread, they participated in the apostles' teaching and in the fellowship and the prayers, and I quote, day by day, house by house. And the original pattern of Christianity was, every day is a holy day. Every day is a holy day. You don't need special holy days in the New Testament because all days are holy. Now, that doesn't mean we take off work every day. That might be a nice conclusion to draw. But it means that we don't go about our work and report to the things in the same way the world did. We try not to be fashioned according to the world's way of doing things. We carry a totally different mindset to the job when we go about our ordinary work. Nothing is ordinary for the Christian. And you know, tomorrow is just as holy a day as today, and Tuesday will be just as holy as it was. And anywhere we go, that's a holy place, because holiness is a condition of God's people. Jesus told the Samaritan woman that the day was coming when religion wasn't going to be about the stuff that happened in special buildings. You know, and you had to go one place and not another, and priestcraft and all that kind of thing. It was going to be about spirit and truth. I think we're all familiar with the passage. And the Apostle Paul also said in our text, if you look at the second text, therefore, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of what? Worship. This is how you worship now. And he goes on to say, do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world. In other words, be holy, remove yourself from the ordinary. But what instead? Be transformed by the renewing of your mind, right? Take it out of the worldly meaning, fill your mind with God-related things. They do it how often? Every day. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now, I think that's why the New Testament didn't identify special holy days, as every day was holy for the Christian and every place holy. Nevertheless, every day can be holy, but some of these holy days can be special for certain reasons, can't they? Do you think you should give up celebrating your birthday? No, it's just fine. That's a holy day, too, and you might celebrate it a little differently. And I think with Christians, even though every day was holy, it was fine to start to think of Sunday, the first day of the week, as a day for fairly special things. No contradiction there. I think that what happened in the early church, a good example of it could be to think about communion. Communion, I think, probably originally was thought of as every time people ate their meals, house by house and day by day in the new Christian community. You know, we're thinking of once a week things, right? Let me ask you, the point of communion is what? To remember the broken body and the shed blood of our Lord. Isn't that what we do? How often should you remember those things? Once a week? No, you should remember those things all your conscious life, shouldn't you? The broken body and the shed blood of the Lord. It's not restricted. And when Jesus was at a richly spread Passover feast, which happened once a year, okay, he took from the feast the two things that run every table at every meal every day, the bread and the wine, and he said, as often as you do this, not that, not the once a year blowout, this, the common, the ordinary. And I think the first Christians understood it that way. They didn't take a meal without intentionally focusing on the broken body and the shed blood of the Lord. And we should remember it not just when we're eating, but in between too, shouldn't we? But what happened? Isn't it fitting that we have a special communion when we have the larger body together. You know, when we had supper last night, Joanne and I think we were having a Lord's Supper, but we have a really special one when the larger body gets together like we do here. Well, that's how the church started to think. All days are holy, but some days are special holy days. Not in New Testament times, but soon after, they added Easter. Okay? And Easter was especially significant, Resurrection Day. And a good deal later, actually, it didn't happen right away, they added Christmas. And as you go through the Middle Ages, they got where they were adding holy days all over the place. Almost every day was holy in a new sense. And it got so bad, they had to throw some of them out and condense others so that people would be able to go about their daily jobs. You and I don't have to go to medieval extremes, though, to find some days special. Days like Christmas are special for Christians. Days like Easter are special, and I think even New Year is special for Christians. I want to talk now about the Old Testament a moment. In the Old Testament, there are lots of holy days. The answer isn't zero, but the answer is very long. I'm not going to try to mention them all. There are too many, but I'll give a few examples. The weekly one we all know. You shall remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. You know the commandment. And they're not to work, and they are instead to focus upon God and serving Him better. Every month they had some less well-known ones, the new moon festivals, but they were a big deal in ancient times. There were three annual feasts in Moses' law. Those were blowout parties, feasts, and one annual fast, and that's the opposite. That's a very solemn and sorrowful day. The first of the annual feasts in the spring was Passover. Passover commemorated the passing over by the angel of death of the firstborn of Israel because of the blood of the Lamb that covered them over their doorposts. And right after the Passover, the first one, they fled Egypt. Pharaoh let them go. And they were instructed to eat the Passover fully clothed and to have unleavened bread. There wasn't time for the yeast to rise, the bread of haste, it's called. And they had for the first week to eat that bread, and so for 7 days they ate unleavened bread. And to commemorate it, for 7 days after the Passover, the Jews of Jesus' time ate unleavened bread. And so it was called the Passover week rather than the Passover day. 50 days later came Pentecost. Okay. Pentecost was a Jewish festival, and it's especially near to the heart of Christians because that's when the church began. Peter preached the first Christian sermon on Pentecost Day. We're told the story of that in Acts 1 and 2. Pentecost was a festival, though, that was above all to honor the giving of the law on Mount Sinai. Trace the amount of time it took the Israelites, leaving Egypt to get to Sinai, you get to about 50 days. And so it was called the Feast of the Law. The third festival in Moses' law was Tabernacles. It came in the autumn. It was also called Ingathering. You can kind of run together Thanksgiving and Halloween and all those kind of autumn things into it. It lasted 7 days, except every seventh year when it lasted eight. They lived outdoors, they camped out. Every day they were learning from Moses' law, they were being taught and teaching their children. And on the eighth day, every seventh year, the whole nation got together and they renewed the covenant. That is, they stood to, just like renewing marriage vows, they stood to the covenant again as a people. Talk about making resolutions. The Day of Atonement, the only solemn day, was a day of national confession of sins, repentance before God, and seeking God's forgiveness. There are others I'm not going to go into about births and days of purification and vows, and seventh year of release and 50th year jubilee when property goes back, and the details would go on and on. But one I thought it appropriate to mention was New Year's. They loved New Year's Day. In fact, they had two of them. They had a New Year's Day for religious purposes, Passover. For all other purposes, it came in September, Rosh Hashanah. And it'd be wrong to say they settled for one New Year's Day. Be here a long time, Kevin, with the party, if we did it the Hebrew way. It lasted about 23 days. It commenced with Rosh Hashanah. It led up to, with a lot of other ceremonies, the Day of Atonement 10 days later. And then 5 days after that, they started the whole week of the Feast of Tabernacles with a learning, and every seventh year, renewing the law and the covenant. New Year's was a big, big deal to them. And making resolutions went with that. Now, if we look at all the holy days that ancient Israel had and ask what did they do, you could write books about it. In fact, books are written about it. You know, you could have many long chapters on the Passover alone and all the details. But if we stand back from the details and say, let's try to get the big picture. What did they do on a holy day in the Old Testament? One, the negative part. They didn't go to work, right? And our culture's got that part down fine. Okay? Two, however, we can find that there were five things that were always or nearly always done on a Hebrew holy day. Number one, they focused on God and what he had done for them. Reminders. Number two, they educated the young. They even had built-in ways to do it. When you observe the Passover, for example, there's a place where the children ask a question, and the parents say this, and you're supposed to explain the symbolism of everything that you're doing. You're educating. Third, rededication to serve God more faithfully. All of these feasts had a dedicate yourself again to God kind of a component to them. Fourth, I didn't know where to put this one, but it was true of all of them. Don't just do it for the in-group. Look outside. Go out and find poor people. Go out and find lonely people. Go out and find some immigrants. Okay. Get people who aren't normally part of your group and make sure they're part of the festivities. Include people who are outsiders in all the things you're doing. And fifth, what an interesting command, rejoice. Rejoice. You might say, well, it's not just okay to rejoice. God commands it. He tells them they must. If you have, and I know I once had, a negative view about how the Jews felt about their holy days based on New Testament, you're probably thinking about what a gloomy thing they made of the Sabbath, aren't you? That happened only a few years before Jesus' time. For centuries, the Sabbath had been a happy day. And it was really not pleasing to God at all what the Pharisees and scribes had done to it. That's why Jesus had to remind them, Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. The Sabbath is meant to be a happy time, too. We find as we look at how they're to observe the various festivals, their command to enjoy it. In your inserts, look with me at the two quotations from Deuteronomy. Then celebrate the Feast of Weeks to the Lord your God by giving a freewill offering in proportion to the blessings the Lord has given, your God has given you, and rejoice before the Lord your God at the place he will choose as a dwelling for his name, you and your sons and daughters, your men servants and maid servants, the Levites in your towns, the aliens, that means immigrants, foreigners, okay, the fatherless, and the widows living among you. And a little later, celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles for seven days after you have gathered the produce of your threshing floor and your wine press. Be joyful at your feast, you, your sons and daughters, your men servants and maid servants, and the Levites, the aliens, the fatherless, and the widows who live in your towns. So we find that they were commanded to enjoy themselves. And as we Christians celebrate our special holy days, I think we should do the same. Yes, we should keep the negative part. Don't work. And second, and so importantly, we should instead devote a significant component of the day to pleasing God and honoring him in these ways. We should include reminders of what God has done for us with praise and with prayer. We should include an occasion to educate the young. Don't let them drift the culture's way, because if you do, I assure you that their peers and TV and video games are going to create them. They will be the people that are made by those things if you don't intervene to do something more than that. Third, you should rededicate yourself to God. Promise to serve him more faithfully. Make resolutions of the kind Jenny talked about in the children's message earlier. Fourth, look around you. Isn't it easy to be a little clannish and ingrown when we're celebrating things? Are there people out there who are lonely and left out? Are there people that maybe we should reach out to and say, come be part of us? This is a special day, and we do it together. And rejoice. Today, I haven't meant to frown too sternly at our culture. There are a lot of good things in our culture, and mostly there are an awful lot of things that are just harmless, aren't there? Okay. It's quite harmless to have some nostalgia about white Christmases. It won't hurt you. Stories about Frosty and Rudolph are just fine, having a thing to do with Christianity, but they're really just fine. Okay. At Easter, candy, bunnies, eggs, no problem, have fun. New Year's, well, a kiss at midnight, this is also good, right? Kiss at midnight, singing Auld Lang Syne, those kind of things, won't hurt anyone a bit. And in fact, I think that we can do all of those things that our culture does, just about all of the things that our culture does, and give them Christian meanings. We can baptize them. Isn't that what our ancestors did when they came up with bunnies and eggs? Bunnies and eggs were part of fertility worship of the Germans before Christians came in. They just took them over and gave them Christian meanings of new birth. Okay. Isn't that what our ancestors did with druids when they took over Yule logs, the trees, and the mistletoe? They said, fine, we like these things too. We're not going to think druid thoughts. We're going to give them Christian meanings. And you and I can do that with Frosty, can't we, if we want to? So there's no harm in that. Enjoy these things, but give them Christian meanings. Gloominess is not a virtue. Making war with the culture unnecessarily is not a virtue. Okay. But the one thing we must really avoid is to let the culture script for us how we observe special Christian holy days. Don't make it be where we only do what people who are non-Christians are doing, and only do the things that have the meanings that non-Christians have. We need to say with Joshua, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And we need to mean it. And we need to really do it. And part of meaning it and doing it is how we carry out part of those holy days. Focus on God. Praise Him. Pray. Use it as a chance to teach the young. Renew commitments. Be sensitive to outsiders. Include them in what you do. And always, always rejoice. Look with me at the last part of your bulletin insert, Paul's commandment to the Philippians. Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Isn't that a pretty good answer to how we can remove the day from the ordinary and give it a new meaning that is God-centered? Isn't this a good answer to what it's like to worship? Fill your minds with these things. Isn't it a good answer to how our holidays can become holy days?
You've been listening to Dr. Steve Trammell at Hayes Christian Church. Hayes Christian Church is a non-denominational fellowship in Hayes, Kansas. We are supported by the generosity of our members, attenders, and friends. The financial support we raise goes to projects which further spread the gospel to those who do not yet know Jesus, to local, national, and international missions, and they help to keep these podcasts free. If you'd like to share a monetary gift with us, please visit our webpage at hayeschristianchurch.org and click on the donate button. Or you may mail your gift to P.O. Box 1111, Hayes, Kansas 67601. If you have questions, comments, or would like more information, we would love to hear from you. Simply go to our webpage and click on the Contact Us form. Thank you for your generosity, and may God bless you as you seek to follow Him.